Welcome to the Almirall Full Year 2017 Financial Results Conference. Before we move ahead, I would like to remind you that certain statements that we will make in this presentation are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements reflect Almirall judgment and analysis only as of today, and results may differ materially from current expectations based on a number of factors affecting our businesses. Before we start, although full year results 2017 were planned to be released this morning, last Friday, during the process of uploading the documents to the Spanish regulator's website, we sent one statistical document by mistake. In order to allow you to have full picture, we decided to release the full 2017 financials, as well as the press release, including guidance 2018, dividend policy, and treasury stock program. 2017 audited accounts were also released. As of today, all documents are also available in English on our corporate website. Presenting today, we have Peter Guenter, Chief Executive Officer, David Nieto, Executive Vice President, Finance, CFO, Usha Hardas, Executive Vice President, Research and Development, CSO. We will also have with us Alfredo Barón, Executive VP, Global Commercial Operations, for the Q&A. This presentation was released early this morning and now is available on our corporate website. We will now kick off with the results presentation. After that, we will open a Q&A session.
Thank you, Pablo, and good morning. Welcome to the full year results presentation. First of all, we delivered on the revised guidance for both total revenues and EBITDA, despite difficult U.S. environment. I'm pleased to see that the successful launch of Skilarence in Germany and the U.K. continues. We have now captured 40% volume of the standard of care in Germany, which is Fumaderm, and also approximately 20% of the overall conventional market share in that same Germany. The Aqua business stabilized in the last quarter and accounts now for only 8% of our revenues. In Q4, we received an $80 million sales-related milestone from the AstraZeneca partnership. We have implemented a strong SG&A cost control throughout the second half of 2017, and as a result, SG&A has been declining in double digits. More importantly, in terms of R&D, we have strengthened our R&D pipeline by signing an in-licensing deal with Athenex for KX2391, an innovative drug with new mode of action for actinic keratosis, and our head of R&D, Bhushan Hardas, will come back to this later during the presentation. If you go to the next chart, you can see that the Skilarence growth continues month after month, both in Germany and the U.K. Moreover, we see that this growth is coming from both switch and new patients. As I said earlier, in Germany, Skilarence achieved 40% of Fumaderm volumes by January, and our share in the total conventional market already accounts for 20% in value share. Finally, we are starting 2018 with a yearly run rate of approximately 50 million euros. Hence, we are confident that peak sales of this product will be in excess of 50 million euros. On the next slide, you see a couple of KOLs who basically give us overwhelming positive feedback from various countries across Europe, which reinforces our belief in and our commitment to Skilarence. Moving forward, on the next slide, you will see that Skilarence is due to be launched in Finland, Poland, Netherlands, Spain, and Italy in 2018. In 2019, it will be launched in Portugal, Slovakia, Czech Republic, and Belgium. We are on track to exceed 50 million euros, the peak sales we initially gave for this product. The estimated peak sales for the psoriasis franchise, that is Skilarence and tildrakizumab together in Europe, are expected to be in excess of 250 million euros. I will now pass the word to David for more detail about the financials during 2017.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning to everyone. In 2017, we delivered total revenue of 756 million, declining 12%. This was driven by net sales down 16% that were impacted by the important shortfall of our U.S. business. Regarding the other income, we had a good year. with an increase of 23%, mainly driven to the AstraZeneca partnership. In that sense, we have a strong news flow linked to the Phase 3 U.S. combo and the achievement of a sales-related milestone during the year. Regarding cost management, we actively manage our R&D portfolio and also deliver important SG&A savings to reinvest in new product launches such as Kidarens. I will come back to SG&A later in a separate slide. EBITDA was in line with the low end of the updated guidance, as mentioned during our Q3 earnings call. We delivered an EBITDA of $142 million, declining by 37%, which is about 22% margin. Again, the decline was solely driven by the shortfall of our U.S. businesses. At year-end, we continue to have a strong balance sheet and ended up 2017 with a net debt position of $40 million, inclusive of $70 million of pension liabilities. With this, we are proposing a stable dividend of 19 cents per share, and also the possibility to acquire treasury shares up to 5% of the company. These two elements require approval of the AGM that will take place on May 12. Next slide, please. On this chart, you can see the 2017 net sales evolution. In Europe and rest of the world, we perform well, particularly in key countries like Spain and Germany, and with key products like Ciclopoli and Sativex, both growing double digits. The generics impact in the region was about $20 million, fully in line with our expectations. As you can see from the chart, Aqua was the biggest drag on net sales, with the loss of Acticlid business going generic, as well as the inventory rebalancing and the issues around the patient assistance program we had earlier in the year. Having said this, Acticlid share has now stabilized, as well as the Aqua business in general, like Peter already mentioned earlier. Going into 2018, we do not expect Aqua to be a driver of growth. Thermi had a disappointing performance in 2017, declining by more than 20%. It was a transition year, as we already discussed, where we upgraded management team and professionalized our go-to-market approach. Next slide, please. Looking at 2017 P&L, I would like to make a couple of comments. Again, the important decline of gross margin was mainly driven by the U.S. shortfall, where margins are high, and also by the geographic mix. We partially compensated the gross margin decline by important cost savings measure. However, without compromising the investment in R&D and also new product launches like Skilarent and Tilma. R&D spending was 13.7% of net sales, and we expect to stay between 13 and 14% going into 2018. Before we move from this P&L slide, I would like to mention that net sales and other income definition will be impacted by the introduction of new IFRS 15. For this, we prepare a stated P&L quarter by quarter in the backup of this presentation. Next slide, please. Regarding SG&A, you will find on this chart the full year evolution on the top and the Q4 on the bottom of the chart. As already mentioned during the last earnings call, we implemented productivity initiative and are driving significant cost reduction in order to release funds to invest in new product launches. During Q4, we actually benefit from Aqua restructuring as we resize the business to the new environment and market reality. In 2017, we did an excellent job in reallocating resources, and we will continue doing this in 2018 as we expect SG&A to be flat in absolute value on a year-over-year basis. Next slide, please. With this, this is an important slide helping to reconcile EBITDA to normalized net income. In 2017, we took impairments of 324 million euros, which have no cash impact and are mainly linked to Aqua Pharmaceutical for 246 million and the poly pipeline as discussed in Q3 and primarily linked to the US market. With all this impairment, we leave 2017 US issue behind us. Our corporate income tax was positive in 2017, given a lot of balance sheet reversal linked to the impairments. I recommend to look at our cash flow when it comes to tax paid during 2017 17. Next slide, please. Looking at the balance sheet, we see, of course, an important decrease of the goodwill and impairment, with impairment and intangible assets, despite the fact that we added the Athenex deal in December. The financial assets include primarily the fair value of AstraZeneca partnership. At year end, we had a net cash position of 30 million euro, excluding pension plan, or a net debt position of 40 million if we include all the pension liabilities. All in all, we have a strong and healthy balance sheet at the end of 2017. Because of our strong balance sheet and confidence in 2018, the board will propose to the General Assembly the following. On the dividend, we are proposing the stable dividend of 19 cents per share, which is about 33 million euros in total. It will be distributed in the form of a scrip dividend, so it can be either cash or share at the shareholder discretion. The last day of the entitlement will be the May 30th for payment on June 1st. Separately, we will request the authorization to acquire a maximum of 5% of the company to be held as treasury shares. Like many other companies, we want to take the opportunity to build a treasury shares position, which will be used for general purposes, and any share acquisition would be in accordance to the appropriate regulatory requirements. Next slide, please. On this slide, we want to provide you with our priorities when it comes to capital allocation. This is a question we often have, and we want to answer it. First, our priority goes to investing behind new product launches and build our European franchise in psoriasis. For this, we talked earlier about important effort we're doing to reallocate SG&A resources. Second, we are focused in strengthening our R&D pipeline, which is at the end the core of our specialty pharma company. This also includes the in-license of phase 3 assets like we recently did with the Athenex deal that Bhushan will talk next. Third, we want to provide a secure and stable dividend to shareholders. Finally, we will focus on accretive M&A deals that would reinforce our core business and bring critical mass to further leverage our fixed cost base. I will hand over now to Bhushan to have a review on R&D and the actinic keratosis update.
Thank you, David. As Peter and David mentioned earlier on, in December, we signed a deal with Athenex to in-license a phase 3 clinical trial asset for topical treatment of actinic keratosis. In this particular slide, let us have a look at actinic keratosis in slightly more in details. This slide shows us the natural history of the disease, its primary etiology being exposure to the UV rays from sun, and if actinic keratosis is not treated, its progression into squamous cell carcinoma. In 2005, just under 6 million office visits in the United States of America were primarily because of the photodamaged skin presenting with actinic keratosis and other related diseases. In reality, this should be much higher because about 25% of the population in Northern Hemisphere suffers with photodamaged skin. As far as actinic keratosis is concerned, it presents on a sun-exposed skin with small, rough spots. These spots are easily felt than seen. With time, they will progress into a larger lesions that could be raised, red, scaly, or as much as 3 to 10 millimeters in diameter, or even larger. Patients often present with multiple lesions at various stages of the disease progression. And I think this is very important to note here. A patient will have AK1, 2, and 3 at the same time. Actinic keratosis is a chronic disease with high rate of recurrence. We cannot, and I emphasize on this, we cannot, has been shown by some of the papers, relate the severity of the presentation to its progression to squamous cell carcinoma. Therefore, it is very important that we create awareness of this disease and educate not only patients but the doctors that treatment of actinic keratosis is mandatory. When we look at the treatment paradigm in the next slide, there are three ways we can treat the disease. If you have a standalone lesion or lesions about 1 to 3, it is mostly treated by cryotherapy. And if there are smaller or larger fields affected, then we can use a treatment for field treatment. Cryotherapy and field treatment will never compete with each other because patient population or the area of the treatment is completely different. When it comes to field treatment, in the next slide, the current small and large field treatment options are limited primarily because of the severe skin reactions and long duration of treatment. The severe skin reaction may be necrosis or severe inflammation, thereby actually preventing people from using that treatment. And when it is a long treatment duration, patient will not be compliant or they will discontinue the treatment before it is completely finished. Now, talking about KX2-391, this is a significant game changer in the market of field treatment. We think this is going to be an opportunity to fill unmet needs in actinic keratosis, and we estimate peak sales of around 250 million euros. And why do we say that? It is a better product, capturing significant market share, increased patient compliance because of its side effects, and significantly expanding the class because of its ideal product profile, and I will go into that in details. So why do we say it is a new, better product? It is a completely new mechanism of action. It is a new chemical entity and does not compete with any of the other APIs on the market. KX2-391 is a potent inhibitor of proliferation of the cell. It arrests cell growth by stopping mitosis, thereby inducing apoptotic cell death. KX2-391 has also demonstrated inhibition of malignant cell migration as well as tumor progression in mice. This is very exciting. And a couple of weeks ago at American Academy of Dermatology in San Diego, phase two results for this particular KX2-391 were presented. 186 patients were enrolled in 16 sites in the United States. Here, we see the data for 5 days treatment, once a day pathology, and 25 centimeters square, because this dose was picked for the phase three clinical trial, which is already ongoing and has actually completed the recruitment. Primary effectiveness was mentioned as 100% clearance in AK lesions at day 57. When you look at the chart, on face, about 52% of the patients cleared 100%, and on scalp, about 33% of the patients cleared the lesions. Just as a note, we are looking at the data of a main competitor with two clinical trials in phase two trial. This data is for the 3 day treatment. On face, the clearance is about 42 and 52, respectively, and scalp about 15 and 29. This basically tells us that our data is pretty similar to the competition. Next slide. When we see the tolerability of KX2-391 in the field treatment, local skin reactions, LSRs, are graded from 1, which is less severity, to 4 as the worst severe. And when you look at the chart for KX2-391 5-day treatment, erythema, flaking, crusting, swelling, vesicles or papules, and ulceration, it's very low, either 1% or nil. When we look at the label of a competitor, erythema is about 24%, flaking is about 9%, crusting, swelling, 5, 6 and 5%, and vesicles and papules are about 6%. and there is some mention about erosion or ulceration of the skin as well. This is one of the major reasons why patients, as well as doctors, should prefer KX2-391 in a field treatment. In the next slide, we talk about the unmet needs in the field treatment of actinic keratosis. To us, an ideal product should have an effective treatment, should be well tolerated, and have a shorter duration. KX2-391 fits all these three criteria. Therefore, we expect peak sales in excess of 250 million euros on the market. Not to forget our previous experience with two actinic keratosis drugs, Actikerall and Solaris. Let us look at our pipeline. We have worked really hard in an increasingly robust pipeline, and as you can see here, Tildrakizumab is under registration. We expect approval in fourth quarter 2018. We remain very committed to our first launch in the biologic space. The new data, long-term data, which was presented at the AAD, shows that the long-term treatment of this drug is safe and effective, and not only that, it is one of the most user-friendly biologic on the market. You only have to use treatment once every quarter. An increasingly solid phase three programs that we have in our pipeline in actinic keratosis, androgenic alopecia, as well as onychomycosis. We are starting to move some projects into early development in rosacea, psoriasis, as well as atopic dermatitis. Being said that, I will hand it over to Peter for further comments.
Thank you, Bhushan. So let me wrap up the year 2017. So obviously, we're very glad with the positive readings of Skilarence launch and further rollout as planned in Europe in 2018. We have an increasingly robust R&D pipeline, which is entirely focused on skin health. Late-stage in-licensing and M&A remain a priority. And finally, stable dividend proposal at 19 cents a share and treasury share proposal to be approved at the next General Assembly. If you go to the next slide, and we then focus on 2018. So what will be the areas of focus for 2018? Obviously, launches. During the third quarter 2017, we launched Skilarence in Europe with encouraging feedback, particularly in Germany and the UK. In 2018, we continue with the rollout in a number of other European countries. We expect to launch Tildrakizumab at the end of 18 or early 2019. Second, in our existing portfolio, we selectively invest in growth assets, such as Ciclopoli and Sativex, growing double digits, and we expect to see Thermi returning to growth. We continue to be disciplined on our investments in order to sustain long-term profitable growth. We continue to develop our pipeline at all stages for key derma indications and expect to see some key data readouts in 2018. Finally, in-licensing and M&A remains a key priority for us, and we are focused on delivering sustainable shareholder value. Which brings me to the final slide. 2018 total revenues are expected to grow at mid-single digits, with net sales to grow mid to high single digits and other income to decline double digits, as mentioned by David. For EBITDA, we expect around 20% growth versus 2017, with a strong leverage driven by the core business. I now pass the word to Pablo for the Q&A.
Thank you, Peter. Barbara, back to you for the Q&A, please.
Okay, thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. We will take our first question today from Trung Huynh from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, Trung from Credit Suisse. Thanks for taking my questions. I have three, if I may. First, on the basis you have maintained your dividend in the face of tough earnings, how should we think about this going forward? Secondly, you mentioned Thermi was disappointing. Can you perhaps give us an update on your expectations for 2018 and some of the issues that you hope to overcome? Your guidance in August 16 was for over 100 million in 3 to 4 years. Is that something you are still targeting? And finally, your US steroid franchise more than halved in 2017 versus 16. Can you describe what is happening here? Thank you very much.
Yes, Trung. So let me take the Thermi question first. So we do believe that indeed 2017 has been a pivotal year in rebuilding this company, and you know, we changed the management. We have a very experienced management going forward, and we do believe that 2018 will be again the year where Thermi starts to grow again. And we do stand by our initial forecast, which is indeed in excess of 100 million for peak sales. In terms of the US, well, you know, what happened is was a little bit of the perfect storm, I think, in 2017, right, where we had generics for Acticlate and Cordran, where we had issues, as you know, in terms of internal control. The whole U.S. Aqua business is now, as I mentioned before, only 8% of our total sales. The good news is that the internal control mechanisms and processes do work, so we have a very intense and good oversight of control. And what we're going to try to do in the next couple of months and years is to, of course, drive demand for those products which we still promote, for example, Velatin. But to be totally transparent with you, with the today portfolio we have, we think that the future growth of our Aqua business will remain limited until, of course, we can feed that platform with new innovation, for example, our Athenex product. On the dividend question, I'll pass it to David.
Yes, thank you. So on the dividend, we gave you the priorities, I think, on the capital allocation. We'll give you a little bit on how we think about investing in the money. And what we have said in the past, we will have a 40% dividend policy of the normalized net income, right? This was reaffirmed in 2016, and it has not changed. However, when we see years that are a little bit extraordinary, like this year, we will continue to pay the dividend in the form of a scrip dividend. So what we want to give now is stable and consistent dividend going forward, and we want to use the possibility to do scrip dividend, which can be either cash or share for shareholders, and this has a good benefit for value investor that we have now added to the base of main shareholders. I hope this answers your question. If not, then we can always talk about it tomorrow at your conference.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Ignacio Mendeville from JB Capital Markets.
Hi, good morning. I have three questions. The first one, can you give us some color on the 87 million euros other adjustment registered in your cash flow statement? The implicit figure here would be 161 million euros negative cash outflow in the quarter, which is quite important. Then secondly, in the U.S., you have reduced your SG&A expenses in the U.S. by 30 million euros in the quarter. So extrapolating this figure, we would reach about 50 million euro savings year over year. Is this assumption correct? Could we expect margin, EBITDA margin in the U.S. to stand at the level of consolidated group in 2018? And finally, regarding the oral franchise, it has reached about 7 million euros in 2017 versus the 30 million euros guided, which implies negative sales in the fourth quarter. I guess this should be explained by the continuous negative impact of the...
Sorry, Nacho, sorry.
Yes.
Could you repeat the last question and speak a little bit louder, please?
Yes, which one? The one regarding...
The last question, please. Yes.
Yes, so basically the RAN franchise has reached 7 million euros in 2017 versus the 30 million euros guided. which implies negative sales in the fourth quarter of 2018. So can you give us some explanation for this performance and what should we expect for 2018?
So, Nacho, let me try to explain, to take your question one by one. I will first answer the cash flow question, and then I will move to the U.S. where the rest of your question seems to be. So on the cash flow, we have a free cash flow negative of $61 million. So basically, our operating cash flow was basically $6 million positive. And then we had CapEx and investments, and those investments are mainly linked to some of the intangible that we added to the base, you know, with some of the deals that we have. So I think the cash flow is well under control, and I think I don't get exactly the question about if you feel that is a high or low, but I think it is at or even better than expected in 2017. So we can maybe take this in a separate call. But I can drive you through the cash flow on a separate call. Talking about the U.S., so we have, as you said, a big benefit in Q4 about the U.S. because we restructure our Aqua franchise, right, or our Aqua organization. This has helped us to continue, resolve the situation in Aqua. Like we told you in Q3, we had bring the situation under control, and in Q4, on top of this, we have done the restructuring, and still the business is still not only under control, but now in a break-even situation like we had in Q3. So we don't see a big growth driver of Aqua in 2018, like we mentioned earlier, and the same on the EBITDA. We expect Aqua to be break-even to slightly positive, but this is going to be a transition year until we have new drugs coming to the pipeline in the U.S. Regarding Acticlate, we ended up the year, as you said, and we wanted to give you that visibility on the backup slide. We ended up the year about $6 to $7 million, right, versus the $30 million we gave at the guidance in July. And basically, this is why we had the range in the guidance between 140 and 170, because we did not know how the entry of generic impact, we gave the guidance 2 weeks after the generic enter on our main franchise and number one product in the company would affect us. And I think Acticlate now is one of our lowest sales product, and it will remain like this going forward. We're not counting on Acticlate to deliver, of our 2018 guidance. I hope this answers your questions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Francisco Ruiz from Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I have three questions. The first one is, could you tell us how much of the Athenex agreement has been booked as upfront payment this year? I mean, in 2017, and if what is remaining for next year. Second is when you talk about €250 million peak sales for KX2391, it is net of royalties. The third question, if I may, I have four. So the third question is on the IFRS 15 adjustment, that it is €44 million reconciliation between net sales and other income. Could you give us a light on what these €44 million come from? And finally, if you could give us an idea of how much the generic that you signed with Teva has contributed to sales. Thank you.
Okay, Francisco. So let me just start by answering the Athenex peak sales question. So the 250 million peak sales, which, like Bhushan explained, is predicated on the excellent product profile, so taking significant market share in the existing market, having much better compliance in the treatment of patients, and of course, last but not least, increase the market size compared to where the market size is today, is actually is 250 million is sales, right? So of course, you have to deduct the royalties from that. I remind you that the key items of the Athenex agreement foresee, number one, an upfront and near-term payment of $55 million. There's an additional $65 million for launch and additional indication milestones. And then finally, sales milestones, which are expected to be in the neighborhood or up to $155 million. David, can you answer the question on what has been booked and when?
Yes. If you go to our consolidated financial statement, you will see that we have given details about the three deals that we have done this year and gave the total of how much we included in our intangible about all three deals. The total are 93. I'm not going to give you each detail about each of the deals, but you can imagine that Athenex is a bigger portion of that. And we, of course, booked the 55 million for sure, but then the rest is being probabilized depending on the probabilities of success, and that's the right way of doing it. Talking about IFRS 15, so the 44 million that moves from other income to net sales, you have to look at this as what is the business basically that is going to provide us constant royalty going forward and for which we are operationally involved versus the one that is going to be to stay at the other income level, which are maybe more linked to a deal or just the fact of, passive, sort of a passive income. So going forward, you will see on the other income mainly the elements of the AstraZeneca deal that are linked to milestone payments, right? I hope this answers your question, but basically with the IFRS 15, the net sales is giving you a much better indication what is our sustainable business going forward. Regarding Teva, we don't give those breakdown, but what we are pleased is to see that 50% of the market share that was taken by the generics, about around 40 to 50% went to Teva. And with that, we could, I would say soft land our profit, decline in the U.S. But we don't give detail about that, and our agreement is confidential.
Thank you, David. Next question.
Our next question comes from Peter Welford from Jefferies.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I've got a few. So firstly, just on the Fermi business, I wonder if you could just outline there what it is, I guess, that you're hopeful the business is going to see improving trends in 2018. Is it going to be now a pickup in the placement of instruments? Do you anticipate a greater pull-through of your existing instruments? Or do you only anticipate targeting new accounts with the sales force? I guess you're sort of curious in more detail as to what you're hoping to achieve there. And also with the rationale for returning Silhouette rights during the year recently. On the financials then, wonder I just ask about the treasury shares. Firstly, is there agreement from the family to take part in this pro rata? And strategically, what's the rationale, I guess, for thinking you want to do M&A with stock rather than, I guess, just using the cash directly with potential other parties? And then finally, just on the pipeline, I noticed 3073, I think that's Nell Psoriasis, has been discontinued. I wonder if you could give us some insights into the decision process there. I know you already discontinued the US, but what was the rationale for discontinuing that product? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Peter, for the questions. Let me take Thermi first. So the reason why we're confident, besides, of course, all the more qualitative elements of change, is actually two or three points. Number one is that we have actually refocused our promotion, our detailing, our positioning on the Termivar product, which is actually a best-in-class, non-invasive women's health product, taking advantage, in fact, of both the market growth and the rapidly emerging segment, which this segment actually represents. So if you look at some data out there, and I think we already mentioned that in the last call, is that the women's health market is really a new category in the aesthetic space, and by 2021, actually, it is expected to bring over $2.2 billion in procedure fees from where it is, the last data we have is 2016, which is actually pretty low, by $502 million. So you see that by focusing in this segment and by leveraging the fact that we have a best-in-class offering there is definitely going to drive the growth. Second, in terms of excellence in execution, we have now many executional issues that we identified last year under control. To name just one, field force turnover, which was pretty big last year. We have that now fully under control. And actually, we see indeed that the sales we see in the recent weeks and months are much more in line with where we wanted them to be. Your last question, of course, on the Silhouette agreement. You know, this was a temporary agreement. We decided together with Sinclair to anticipate this interruption a bit earlier than it was expected. And the idea is pretty simple. You know, it's basically allowing us to focus on our core business. Obviously, our core business is more profitable than any distribution deal that you could sign. And you will have seen also in our guidance that we gave for this year that this is a highly leveraged guidance, and that the name of the game is really sustained profitable growth and not top-line growth at all expenses, okay? So that's basically the answer to your Thermi question. For the treasury share question, I'll pass it to David.
Thank you. So on the treasury shares, as we said, today the company has not the option of building a treasury share position. I think what we are doing is asking the General Assembly to be able to go up to 5% in treasury shares. This is going to happen in May. Nothing, of course, is going to be purchased before that. And regarding the question of the family, I think this is basically a company decision, in the sense that the company will acquire the shares on the market. That's how we expect to do it. The purpose of the treasury share thing is to give us options, because today we don't have any options of building it, first. And second, option can be to be used, as you said, in an M&A, paying in shares versus in cash, and also aligning better the incentives, today being paid mostly cash, with shares in the future, right? So I hope this answers your question on the treasury shares.
So then the question on the pipeline on nail psoriasis, Bhushan.
Yeah, thank you. We completed a trial in Europe, and it did not meet the primary efficacy endpoint. That's why we decided to discontinue that trial. And similarly, because of that trial results, we also discontinued the trial in the U.S.
Okay. Thank
That's
you.
That's great. Thank question. You.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question comes from Jimmy Escribano from Banco Santander.
Hi. Good morning. I have a couple of questions regarding the performance of some of the products. So the first one is if you can give us some color on Veltin in Q4. The sales were 3.6 million, coming from 7 million sales in Q3. So anything happening Q4 for this decline, and what could we expect for 2018? And on the other hand, Sativex seems to be performing very well, 24 million in the year, and Ciclopoli, 44 million. Maybe you can give us some guidance, or what could we expect for 2018 also on these two products? Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Jaime. Let's take first Sativex and Ciclopoli, and Alfredo is here with us, so he can answer those two questions. Alfredo?
Thank you for the question, Jaime. You know that we have Ciclopoli, Ciclopirox, mainly in Germany, and the product is doing very well. It's growing 10%. And basically, is this growth rate what we expect from 2018 as well. Apart from Germany, you know that we have some partners in Europe as well, mainly Spain and France, where both are also performing in line with this double-digit growth in terms of sales. And we are expecting the same for 2018. Regarding Sativex, again, the main country is Germany, and the product is growing double-digit. And we expect also in 2018 to continue with this excellent result. Apart from this, you know that the product is available as well in Italy, in Spain, in Norway, and in Belgium, where we are also overperforming, and this is what we expect also for 2018.
Thank you, Alfredo. So, Jaime, your question on Veltin. Basically, I think if you look at the yearly growth, we are very close to 20% growth. And actually, in the fourth quarter, we had a couple of one-time gross-to-net elements and inventory elements. But basically, the product continues to react well to promotion, and that is also what we expect moving forward.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next
you.
Question.
Again, as a reminder to ask a question, please press star one. Our next question comes from Isabel Carballo from BBVA. Please go ahead.
Hello. Two questions, if I may. The first one is for Mr. Gunther. I want to know his feedback after several months at the company, which things have been a positive surprise for him and which things have been negative. The second question is regarding M&A. Could you provide some details of the type of assets you are looking at right now and the maximum financial leverage you could assume for acquisitions? Finally, on SD&A, I think I heard from David that you are expecting a flat evolution for full year 18, and I wanted to know how much are you forecasting to spend in marketing launch and marketing costs for Skilare and Santillra. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Isabel, for the questions. You know, on my first impressions after the first couple of months, obviously, it will not be a surprise to you to tell you that my first months were a little bit turbulent given the ongoing U.S. issues, and but I think we've worked hard with the team to get those under control, to take also the necessary measures. And I must say that I have been positively surprised by the capability, the agility of the team to adapt to those new circumstances and to get a grasp on those issues relatively fast. The second very, very big positive is, of course, the team was extremely well prepared for the launch of Skilarens, and you see that in the first numbers we have shared with you both in Germany and the UK. So that gives me a lot of confidence that the capabilities of the European team are there to make the overall psoriasis franchise a success. And third, I think, is the company is totally dedicated to be successful with the reorientation of the company into dermatology. And you see again that even in my first couple of weeks, we were able to sign this deal with Athenex, in which we believe really very much, and we think this is going to be a game changer. So I think the nice thing of a mid-sized company like Almiral is that once you start to take decisions, the company follows very quickly, and you can move around in certain directions probably much faster than very big companies in which, as you know, I have served for many, many years. On the M&A piece, your second question is really, you can look at it from both sides, right? First, of course, priority remains in dermatology and to reinforce with late-stage in licensing deal the pipeline in dermatology. And that's really typically what we have been doing with the Athenex deal. On the other hand, it's also true that if we can have opportunities to increase critical mass in some key markets, we will definitely also look at that and continue to do that, because as you know, we have the balance sheets to actually do both. On the question on the overall firepower and the SG&A, I'll turn it to David.
Yes, thank you. So on the firepower, we have, of course, bank coming and giving us a lot of leeway here, given the balance sheet that we have. Having said this, we're talking about 2.5 to 3.5 times EBITDA. We don't see us as a company maybe going higher than 3.5 or 3.8 in terms of EBITDA leverage. And it will depend, of course, on the target that we're going to go for. On the SG&A, so yes, the question was, they're going to be flat year over year in absolute value? The answer is yes. And when you look at how much we expect to spend in SG&A in Skylar and Centilla, I hesitate to give you a number, but I'm going to do that. It's between 30 and 40 million. That's what we expect in 2018. And because I would like you to understand the efforts that we're doing to reallocate about 10%, 10 to 15% of our resources, you know, and shift them from, you know, one part of the business, you know, that is maybe, you know, from the past and suffering generic entries, and to put them into what is the future products for the company. So I hope that answers your questions.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Manuel Calho from BPI. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Two questions. The first one is a clarification. So should we expect any further significant impairments this year, or is that unlikely? And the other one, more on a medium-long-term perspective, what would be your profitability target, namely in terms of EBITDA margin, when excluding the positive impact from the AstraZeneca milestone payment? Thank you.
Thank you, Manuel. So for the impairments, David, I think you can take that question.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so on the impairments, as I said in my comment when we talked about the normalized net income, I think with all the impairment we took this year, we're really leaving all the issues behind. You know, however, you know, and bearing unforeseen events, you could still have, you know, things that happen that we have not planned for it. But I have to say that the level of impairment we have taken this year is to leave everything behind. I encourage you to go through our financials, which for the first time we have published in English. This will be very helpful for a lot of investors on the phone, and where we give the details of each of the assets that we have and what impairment tests we have done. And you could also see the sensitivity of those assets versus certain KPIs going forward. But again, I think the worst is behind.
Okay, so on the question on you know, the profitability target, including excluding AstraZeneca, you know, we don't provide that level of detail, number one. Number two, for the time being, we do not provide a long-term guidance. You have just received the guidance for this year, so that that gives you a good perspective on where we can go. And third, you have also seen that, you know, we provide you the details between net sales and overall revenues, and actually there is a positive shift because you have seen that the overall net sales we predict to grow by mid to high single digit, whereas we see a decrease of revenue. So I think from a quality perspective, that gives you also a good insight. But again, you know, the AstraZeneca future income is part of the company, and we're very proud of all the work that the company has done in the past with Actinium, and we rightfully, I think, we reap the benefits of those efforts from the past. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alvaro Aristegui from ACF.
Hello, good morning. I'd like to know your thoughts on how do you think the tildrakizumab competitive environment is evolving given the results we've seen lately on the clinical studies in other IL-23 antibodies, mainly risankizumab and Tremfya.
Yeah. So the question on Tildra, look, I think that if you would talk to most of the KOLs and you read all the documents and the papers and the studies that are published, it's very clear that the IL-23 class is going to be the winning class in our view for many reasons: efficacy, ease of use, tolerability, and so on and so forth. You know that we took a bit of a delay due to the inspection by EMA, but we still think that the license by EMA should be given in October, which sets us up for a launch by the end of this year or early next year. So with that, we think we will be second IL-23 to the market in Europe after guselkumab, but still slightly ahead of risankumab. If you then look at the product profile, you know, first of all, we have a psoriasis franchise with Skilarence, so we can really promote also the continuum of care between Skilarence and then later the biologics. Number two, as Bhushan commented already in his part, we have very good data coming out recently on long-term safety of the product. Number three, this is the IL-23 with actually the simplest or the most convenient dosing regimen, every 3 months dosing regimen for the patient. So I think there's a lot of interesting features for our tildrakizumab, and that is why we stand by our overall psoriasis forecast in Europe in excess of 250 million. So that means Skilarence together with tildrakizumab.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. We are now going to close our Q&A session. And with this, we will complete our conference today. We want to thank you for all your attendance. You may now disconnect.